Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the July edition of The Podyssey. I'm joined as always by Nick, Sam and Roberto. Hello, chaps.
Hello.
Right, got lots coming up in this episode. We're going to be talking about the best car racing films ever made on the back of F1 coming out, starring Brad Pitt. And we will also be doing a retro watch-along. We have all watched Days of Thunder, the previous most classic car racing film. So we'll be discussing that. And we'll tell you a bit about what's coming up at the Odyssey as well. So that's what we're going to be doing. So, chaps, how are we doing? What have you been up to? Nick, I kind of know what you've been up to because I've seen a few films this week, The Odyssey, and you're the only one of you three who actually works there.
That's true. Yeah, I am the only one. No. It was nice to see you there. It's nice to see you back up your claims of, like, oh, I'm been at the Odyssey, and so I was like, no, I've seen you there now. I don't need to know about it. What have I seen? Well, June being Pride Month, I watched a few Pride films that I hadn't seen before. This was at home, a few ones on Mubi and other streaming sites. So I watched Orlando with Tilda Swinton, which is like a period piece, but very fairy tale-esque. Expression of like gender identity and things like that. It was very surreal. I wouldn't know how to explain it. Do watch it though, it's a great movie. And I also watched a couple of rewatches even. I saw Paris is Burning. I don't know if anyone's seen Paris is Burning, very famous gay documentary about ballroom voguing culture in the 90s, 80s. And just about those people and their lives at the time. Yeah, and I also saw, I would recommend it, but it's very adult. It's a film called Mysterious Skin, directed by Greg Araki. I believe he's still current as well, but this movie starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, it's just like journeys, like discovering these stories about two boys and how they sort of, their stories intertwine after a period of time. One's been... I won't give it away. I was literally going to give it away. But check it out. I think that's on Netflix at the moment, or they might have just got rid of it. But if you can't find it there, then Google it.
Mysterious Skin. All right, Roberto.
Nice. Yeah, I always hear about Mysterious Skin. I've only seen a couple of Greg Araki films, but that's the one I need.
That's my only one.
Oh, decent. His other films are crazy. I've been on a bit of hot streak recently. I've been at the cinema a lot. Watched some of probably my favorite genre films in the last couple of months. Ballerina, thought was awesome. I'm like the biggest defender of that film at the moment.
Yeah.
Watching Ana de Armas just tear up people, epic.
This is the John Wick, not prequel or sequel, but side show.
Yes, yeah. And what's great about it is I think it does enough to like differentiate it from the series while retaining the kind of the vibes and the aesthetic. It's just all done through the way Ana de Armas fights. It's like very different from John Wick, because John Wick's very like grapply judo, you know, tactical, and she's just like scrapping around, finding kitchen knives and just cha-cha. So you get a real like sense of the character. So I love that. And Final Destination Bloodlines. Inexplicably, one of my favorite films of the year so far. I'm not even joking. Just like pure sadistic fun. I'm probably the goriest in the series yet, which maybe says something about me, but I just really had a good time watching it. And me and my mates, we went to see it. We were just like, that was so funny. So I recommend that as well. Seen a big film 28 years later, which I'm sure we'll get onto towards the end as well. That was really good. Lots of nuance and carnage all mixed up in there. So yeah, kind of had a good run at the cinema recently, so in high spirits, let's say.
Nice. Yeah. Sam, what have you been seeing?
I watched 28 Days Later in anticipation of 28 Years Later.
This is the middle one. No, this is the first one. Cillian Murphy made him a star. London's dead kind of thing. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. It's kind of the quality, the visual quality of the film is pretty low because it was all filmed on like really early digital cameras. Yeah. So it looks kind of bad, but kind of on purpose, I suppose.
I think it
adds an element.
Absolutely.
To it. Yeah, it kind of gives it all a sense of like grungy underground vibes. Yeah, it's really, really worth watching. It's on iPlayer at the moment. I really, really enjoyed that. So yeah, looking forward to seeing the new one. I also saw Elio, the new Pixar film. I went to the cinema in Amsterdam. I was there a couple of weeks ago, which was like a kind of Art Deco Odyssey style cinema.
Not as good.
Yeah, of course. Not as good. Yes. Yeah, pretty incredible.
What was it called again? Because I've been there as well. So you went to Amsterdam. Mm. And I went to Amsterdam a couple of years ago and found this place. And I had been meaning to tell Sam about it, just forgot. But turns out you went anyway.
Oh, luckily, run. Yeah.
It is beautiful.
It is incredible, yeah. It's a Pathé cinema. So Pathé, the film production company, they have a couple of cinemas in Europe, which is really cool. And yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, it's an amazing place. If you're ever in Amsterdam, definitely recommend seeing that. But Elio is a really good film. And it's kind of a shame it's done really poorly at the box office this year, and just people really haven't turned out to see it. But it's definitely one of my favorite Pixar films in the last couple of years, easily. It's just a really sweet story of a boy who wants to travel to the stars and meet aliens, so he's kind of begging them to abduct him, and antics ensue from there.
I've got a theory on Elio and why maybe it's not done quite so well. It hasn't got like a real instant kids hook when you watch the trailer of it. So, we'll get onto this one, but Cars has got, Owen Wilson skidding up as Lightning McQueen. You're like, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. You got like the Despicable Me, you got the Minions legging about.
Mm.
It's not totally straightforward to work out what Elio's about.
No.
It's for an adult film in a trailer, it's fine to be mysterious. For a kids film, you're like, oh, I think I need a bit more. Do you know what I mean? Told us enough about what it's going to be.
There probably isn't kind of a hook or like a concept, which most of other Pixar films probably kind of hinge on, and that's what gets people in. It's kind of just a really nice story. Yeah, it's kind of a smaller affair. But
what's also good about that particular Pixar movie, like any other though, is that importantly it has an emotional core within it. Mm. And I think that does play an important part. I've seen it as well. I do think I liked it. I wouldn't say it's one of my faves of all time, but I do think it's definitely worthwhile watching, 100%.
Oh, I think me and Freddie are going to watch it. And speaking of him, we went to see, we saw House Tangled Dragon, the live action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
nice.
It's that good. Well. Like the first,
I liked it.
First hour through his eyes. I always watch stuff through his eyes a bit when I'm with him. Possibly a bit talky and slow, but then it absolutely goes wicked when they all start riding the dragons about, and Gerard Butler's amazingly cast as a kind of Viking who shouts a lot.
Isn't it crazy how well Gerard Butler as an animated character translates like out of animation into live action? Like there's a part where he's about to like punch a dragon. I'm like, there's no way this is going to look anywhere near as good in live action than it does in animation. And then he starts like smashing this dragon in the face. And I was like, just like the Hemé version. It just looks like he's very good at selling punching a CGI dragon. It's nuts.
Yeah, he should have been a Viking. He's the most Viking bloke I've seen in quite a while. I really thought it was that.
He really is that character. his magnum opus of performance.
Born to play.
And I saw Mission Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Sneaked in there. It's good. It's long.
Yeah.
Is there still some showings?
There are. So.
Okay, so do go watch it.
Yes.
Do go watch it. If you like those films, you'll definitely like it.
Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing.
Wasn't for me the best of those films.
Hmm.
Glad I saw it through. Really liked, I'm not going to give it away, but there's a person who's in it,
mm-hmm.
and about halfway through they're like, I was actually this guy.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah.
One of the best bits of the film.
That's really good.
Yeah, I rolled my eye at that moment.
Yeah, that was excellent.
I was surprised how well that was.
Yeah, it should have been so poorly done.
Yeah, no, I thought that was great. And I saw The Battle of Voice Island, which was absolutely lovely. Mm. Loved it. Mm. Cried. Thought it was fantastic. Really? Thought it was lovely.
I'm going to come see it this week, I think. It looks really good.
Yeah, really nice. Songs are good as well.
It's charming.
Yeah, it is charming.
It's like a quite a throwaway story, but it's just like really nice. and watchable, and the settings are really calm and stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought Tim Key was really good in it as well, like really good at acting in it.
See, a lot of people, I think, actually have walked into working the shifts. A lot of people have talked about Tim Key. I have no idea who Tim Key is.
Oh, he's a kind of, he's involved in like Taskmaster, just a kind of funny bloke, you know, like a sort of jobbing around the place comedian. So it's kind of mad that he's...
That seems to be the bring-in, Tim Key, is what I say. There's a lot of people who have talked about him.
Yeah, that's why I went to see it. Yeah. And so his mate, who plays the other guy, he had a good little story. So he wrote the music for it. And everyone keeps now saying to him, oh, look, the music's amazing. You've done so well. And he said, look, I've got to come clean. Basically, he wrote kind of a version of those tunes. Kerry Mulligan agrees to do it. Mm-hmm. She brings her whole family to the shoot. Mm. And she's married to Marcus Mumford.
Yeah. Mumford. Really?
And because he's a nice bloke, he's like, well, look, if it's helpful while I'm here, I'll look at some of the tunes. Basically rejigs them so they're like absolutely amazing, and now everyone gives the first bloke the credit for it. But yeah, really enjoyed it, really good, and good to see you working so hard, Nick. And no sight of the fair,
not at all.
I've been up in projection, I promise.
Right, so Brad Pitt is back with a vengeance in F1. Very exciting, looks good for the trailers. We're going to be talking about that shortly, and as a result of that film, we're going to be talking about some of the best racing films, and we're going to have a little talk about Days of Thunder from back in the day. Okay, welcome back to part two of the Podyssey. So, the new F1 film, you can't have missed this, that this is happening. The new F1 film with a frankly madly good-looking Brad Pitt for 60, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Headed up by Brad Pitt is now out. It's going to be Shane the Odyssey, loads of showings coming up. Some of you guys have seen this. So, what are your thoughts?
I saw it because if I'm being honest, I was kind of waiting for it to come round the Odyssey to watch it. Because mm-hmm. I was like, I don't have an interest in F1. And a friend of mine randomly was like, should we go see this? And I was like, got an evening to kill, why not? Mm-hmm. Went to watch it, and to my surprise, one of the kind of more... like just pure summer blockbusters I've seen in a while, in which it was like no frills, here's some entertainment, here's some like charisma and like some funny characters, and there's the play box, and you just kind of, you know, it was just very entertaining, and I was quite pleasantly surprised by it.
I agree. I think it was entertaining enough. I thought the camaraderie between, like, the chemistry between all the actors is pretty good. And I really liked Damson Idris in it as well. Actually, I would say most of them, but Damson Idris was a standout just because he sort of, I don't know, had more charm and wit about him, I thought, anyway, just in the way that he was, like, playing around with his character. But, overall, very entertaining. For anyone who likes adventure, like, you know, those sort of, like, adrenaline-fueled things, you're definitely going to be watching it.
So give us a synopsis.
So, Brad Pitt, he used to race in the 90s, but now he kind of just drifts around. He does kind of like freelance racing in the little leagues. But then Javier Bardem, who I think was actually my favorite character in the film, just because he had these like really funny outbursts at times. So he's like really demonstrated his comedic chops. He comes to Brad Pitt, they're old friends, used to race together. He's like, I need you to come race in Formula One. And one of the funnier controversial talking points is a lot of people going, it is not realistic that they would get 60-year-old Brad Pitt to race in Formula One. Like, just on a pure scientific level. But they continuously bring up as, like, also, he's last resort.
I think we spoke about this on the pod before, but he's a crazy-looking 61-year-old man. Mm-hmm. Like, you can absolutely buy him as, like, early 40s. He just, he doesn't look like... There's some weird stat where, like, he's a month older than Nigel Farage or something. And it just sort of blows my mind a little bit.
That's crazy.
But yeah, Brad Pitt good in it, because I heard all the chat beforehand and people were saying, oh, you know, can Brad Pitt still sell a film? And I was like, what are you talking about? It's Brad Pitt. Of course he can.
I also think so, yeah. He's kind of a great... He's kind of like the center of all these other characters, like shooting ping pong ball quips off of him, and he's just able to... you know, return them very, very, very satisfactorily. You know, it's just a
I think like Brad Pitt just has had those chops for a while. Like in the same way Tom Cruise sort of like had that dramatic acting experience and then just took a break and was like, no, I'm going to make movies that I want to make.
Mm.
Possibly this seems like, I mean, I'm not sure too much of Brad Pitt's interest in F1, but actually that's what's more interesting to me about it too, is that they went to these Grand Prix when they were going on and filming them while everything was happening, you know, crowds full of, you know, stadium full, whatever.
Oh, so they were kind of done at the real event.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's called
the real event. And because there was that time, Silverstone last year, wasn't it? And they had Brad Pitt show up because they were literally putting them in cars and filming them. So it's not like they, you know, I mean, I'm sure they didn't do all the driving, but
yeah, I mean,
quite a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that. No matter what you think of like the film, the racing sequences are really,
I mean, some of the camera work around the racing sequences I have not seen in a movie ever.
Yeah, it's very exhilarating is the word. Yeah. Like very just,
you're very in it. Makes you feel like you're at the seat of the car.
I'm definitely going to see it. We talked a bit about this off air. It's quite a naff name for what's going to be a very big film, isn't it? Just F1.
That's what sells though, isn't it? F1's already a massive franchise already popular among people. I think that if they're involved in it as well as a licensing product, then they're going to want their name all over it too.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. And I guess it doesn't really matter what it's called because we're going to see all that.
If it wasn't F1, it would be called Formula One.
Yeah.
Or Days of Thunder 2, which we'll get into in a minute, because there is a bit of a kind of tenuous...
That is true, actually.
Or quite strong connection between the two films, which we'll get into. But I'm guessing because Tom Cruise was maybe doing Mission Impossible, it switched to its own project afterwards. But
you think at one point this was going to maybe be...
Possibly, but also I think Days of Thunder 2 is in talks as well. But
surely Mr. Baker.
Yeah, sure. I think so. But either way, I think we got a really good racing film out of it. So I think at the end of the day, it's all good. But yeah, we'll kind of talk about the tenuous connection in just a moment. But yeah,
So it got me thinking. Like we were going to discuss like other good racing films. The Pixar, Cars 1, 2, 3, I would say.
Of course.
Cars, fantastic racing film. Rush, have you seen that film?
Chris Hemsworth, isn't it?
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth plays... There's two real drivers. Mm. Chris Hemsworth plays James Hunt and...
Daniel Brühl.
He's really good. He plays Niki Lauda, and it's the story of their real-life rivalry over a season and also the differences between the two drivers. So... Hemsworth, James Hunt is kind of like a bit of a champagne playboy with a kind of George Best type, which I think is probably quite true to life.
Mm.
And it's about them going for this one same title, and Niki Lauda has a crash that nearly kills him halfway through. It's quite amazing. I'm not a Formula One fan, and I think I just sort of ended up watching it. Mm. You know, like when sometimes something just kind of falls onto you, and it was really, really good. Mm. So yeah, I enjoyed Rush.
Yeah, I want to watch. I looked today of like, is there any racing films in my brain that I'm forgetting about that I've seen? I kind of looked and I was like, I realized like in terms of live action like car racing, there is like quite a slim pickings throughout film history.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough.
Well, I think some things are quite famously hard to do. So there's about one or two football films. It's like and Escape to Victory, because it's really hard for football not to look rubbish. I reckon it's hard to do car racing.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. You've got to either put in the effort to make the practical element look good, or you've got to have like a really good animation team, or you're stylizing it enough. I would say works really well in a film I'm going to bring up called Speed Racer.
Mm.
Have you guys seen Speed Racer?
Absolutely.
No. A long time ago.
Great film.
I've been kind of making my way through the Wachowskis like filmography this year.
And, of course you have.
Yeah. So like, you know, The Matrix, talked about Bound on one of the podcasts as well. And I always knew Speed Racer had accrued this like massive cult following. Mm-hmm. Like people kind of, when it first came out, people were like, what is this? Because if you watch it, all the racing is like this weird, slippery CGI, like nightmare world you're looking at. And when I was a kid, I watched it, I was like, I didn't know what to think of it, but I rewatched it, And my theory is Speed Racer has unlocked like a soft spot for racing films because even though all the racing looks kind of crazy, there's this scene where Susan Sarandon comes in and she kind of says to the main character whose name is Speed Racer.
Yeah.
And she plays Mum Racer and John Goodman plays Pops Racer. So you should go see the film anyway, just based on that. But
based on an anime, by the way.
Mm. It is. I was like, should I bring that up? I'd have to eventually, I guess. It's also got a monkey in.
It does, random monkey in there.
Yeah. This is used to do that, just put monkey in films and it's like, whoa! But there's a scene where I'm watching this, I'm an hour in, I'm like, this is hilarious, but you know, what is this in the grand scheme of things? And Susan Sarandon comes in and goes, she kind of relates Speed Racer's antics to making art and like making art in a system that is very like corrupt and the industry's like, oh, you gotta do it for money. And in that moment it clicked because I was like, racing can be an analogous for like a lot of different things. I think that's why I've kind of my heart's been capitalism and how you can speed through it, you know, how you can conquer it with your fam.
Burn.
My heart's been open to the racing film scene. So even though I do not care about the sport at all in real life, I'm kind of now I'm like maybe I will go watch Rush and Le Mans and Ford v Ferrari. So yeah.
Oh, yes, Ford v Ferrari. That's the Christian Bale, Matt Damon one. I've heard it's good. Not seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. It's planned to be great.
I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen Le Mans either. I heard that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's kind of like the classic one. I heard Mark Kermode talking about how on the F1 review he went to see that. His dad was like, "It's going to be epic. Steve McQueen's racing." I think that's part of the excitement as well, isn't it? Like seeing actors in this. Yeah. Exhilarating situation. But enough from me about Speed Racer. What about you guys?
I've got one that I saw a couple of years ago that's fairly new, Gran Turismo, based on the video games.
Yeah. So isn't this, the kid's really good at Gran Turismo, so he gets a chance to race
for real? Yeah, it's for real. Anyway, yeah, it's a true story.
No way.
Yeah. He was like top in the world at Gran Turismo. And so he and a group of others were like put into this competition by Sony, where if they won, they could race Formula One for real. And he was like memorizing all of the tracks, so he already knew them before he'd actually raced any of them for real. And so it's kind of just a successor of this guy just getting insanely good at F1 after playing Gran Turismo for years.
That is absolutely bogus. So he's a real driver now?
Yeah, real driver. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if he's retired, but I
think he might have been.
Was a professional race driver.
And very good, apparently. It's honestly like, it's a pretty simple film, and it's just kind of a very positive film. It's just watching this guy just go nuts and just be really good at racing. It's really good fun time, to be honest. It's nothing crazy. It's just good fun. Good fun watch. It's on Netflix. I love Gran Turismo, the games. I'm really terrible at them when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And the film makes you realize very hard actual driving is,
and how bad you were,
and how bad I was in particular. Yeah.
Slight side story. I had a cousin, my cousin from Portugal, Nunu. He would often like come round when I was younger, and I had like Gran Turismo 3 with like the steering wheel. Mm. And usually, if I played games with people when I was younger and I kept losing to other people, I would like get really upset. I'd be like, no. But like Nunu would come over and he would just beat me like relentlessly at Gran Turismo. But maybe it was just like the feeling of like an older like kind of compadre like playing games with me that I didn't care, but I was just like, he'd beat me and I'd be like, nice, this is epic, I've got my steering, I've got my Gran Turismo steering wheel. And the soundtrack slaps in those games, by the way. Anyway, that's a side story. Yeah.
All right, so in honor of all-time great racing films, one we deliberately haven't mentioned yet, which we're going to talk about as our first ever retro watch along that name of that segment might change, by the way, Days of Thunder. So we're going to come back in a second. We've all watched it, and we're going to tell you how we found it. Right, so now the first ever attempt. We've all watched the film Days of Thunder. Now, Days of Thunder, in case you don't know, is a early 90s racing film, massive at the time. Introduced Nicole Kidman to the world, Tom Cruise when he was already a star, He'd done Top Gun. Mm-hmm. It was kind of another big one from him. Good cast in it. Robert Duvall. And it was kind of really lit. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll get on to him in that film. It was kind of almost the last massive blockbuster racing film before F1, I would say. So we've all gone back and had a rewatch of it. You can find it on Amazon Prime and on Paramount Plus. I think you have to get to Paramount Plus or Prime. Mm-hmm. Whatever way your own telly works, you'll get it. But it's on the Prime. Paramount Plus is on that side of things. Mm-hmm. So, chaps, first of all, thoughts, feelings, vibes on Days of Thunder. I'm going to start with a very quick sentence, say I enjoyed it.
Nice. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would as well, actually. So it's been on my mind because of... So F1 is directed by Joseph Kosinski, who also directed Top Gun Maverick. Mm. And this is interesting because this film is directed by Tony Scott, who directed the original Top Gun. Mm. So I, as far as I understand, when this film came out, it was kind of seen as Top Gun, but with cars. Mm. And it's interesting how we've kind of got into another feedback loop of we've got the Top Gun sequel, and then we've got sort of Top Gun with cars again. But yeah, just... We've lost Tom Cruise. We've kept Hans Zimmer. I don't know if you guys got that. Hans Zimmer composed the score for Days of Thunder, and he's also composed the score for F1. Yeah. And two completely different soundtracks, by the way. If you listen to like the F1 soundtrack, very kind of...
Oh, it's very cool. Oh, very 2025.
Very, you know, pop the window down, riding through. Days of Thunder, and it's funny you mentioned it's an early 90s film. It's like, I think it's 1990 it came out. Mm-hmm. It still feels like we're like drenched in the 80s.
Oh, yes. It's going crazy on the soundtrack. Yeah.
It does. So just to give people a quick synopsis. So Tom Cruise, he is Cole Trickle.
Oh, man, that name. What a name to start with as well.
Mate is the best name as well.
What's his mate called?
Rowdy Burns.
And then, sorry, just to go triple down, which the film does as well, the kind of ultimate antagonist at the end is a guy called Russ Wheeler.
So, it's mad, isn't it? Like, Cole Trickle, I don't know why they've done that, because it's a sort of name that it takes you a few goes to work out that that's his name. Mm. So almost, you almost can't concentrate on the film. Like, so he's Cole Trickle. Yeah, so he's Cole Trickle. Unsurprisingly, a kind of maverick, genius, flawed, you know, young gun kind of thing. He gets put together with a reluctant Robert Duvall, who is kind of his Mr. Miyagi type coach, mentor.
Retired as well.
Because he's come out of retirement.
I'm at retirement.
You got to see this kid. Just take one look at the kid. Yeah. and then it's all set in the world of NASCAR, which, if you're British, is probably quite unfamiliar. But by all accounts, this film, I guess, is what the F1 lot hoped for. This film absolutely blew NASCAR up. It became like one of the biggest promotional tools NASCAR had. Cole Trickle, I found out from Google, based on a real driver called Tim Richmond. He's a kind of hard-partying ladies man. He's a NASCAR driver, died of AIDS in the late 80s. So Cole Trickle's character was actually based on a kind of true guy.
Interesting.
First one for Nicole Kidman. Mm. She really kind of, you can see why she's now famous. She kind of is great in it, I thought.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So yeah, Nick, Days of Thunder. What do you think?
I said to Sam outside, totally honest, I said to Sam outside, if the movie could be described in a sentence, this is obnoxious, the movie.
Ooh.
Like, I just think, like, a lot of them, like, the attitudes in the movie for the characters, I agree.
There's a couple of specific, very sexist bits, isn't there, where even the sound characters, like Robert Duvall is the kind of nice guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, remember, pretty outrageous, even for like 1990.
Yeah,
pretty shocking.
So interesting that, isn't it? You know, but then if you watched it back in 1990, you know, damningly for the culture at the time, I don't think people would have spotted it or mentioned it. But now,
I know.
It is so sexist.
Yeah,
I just think acting was fine, and I do like the cast was great. Actually, Michael Rooker, I actually really enjoyed Michael Rooker.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite.
So it as well. Carrie Elwes, didn't enjoy the character too much because he's just a knob. But Yeah, good casting. Especially love Robert Duvall. He's been in another racing... I didn't mention it before, but he's been in another racing film or car film, Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, he was in that, was he?
Yeah. Also age.
With Vinnie Jones.
With Vinnie Jones, Angelina Jolie in White Braids. Yeah. So, like, I like the casting. And I actually sort of thought, like, I had maybe an expectation for the movie before I went into it. But within the first 10 minutes, I was fully like, what am I doing watching this? Like, honestly, like...
Your homework was what you were
doing. It was my homework, yeah. So I had to stick with it. And I enjoyed some parts of it, and I was like, but the editing was choppy, and, like, you're just straight into it. And I was like, okay, cool. So that's some, maybe what the theme of it, you know, being like, you just sort of non-stop, like you're moving into the next race and next race. But, yeah, I enjoyed the Hans Zimmer score as well. That was a luckily... Because unfortunately, I didn't really enjoy much else about the movie.
Damn, that's interesting. Because, yeah, like I said, I was a bit trepidatious about it. And particularly because the first Top Gun, I was not a fan of that film at all. Mm. Like, I thought it kind of... Top Gun, you're like watching it, and halfway through, you realise this is not really a film about people in fighter jets. It's a film about, like, the people who go in those just hanging out and, like, being dude bros for, like, you know... an extended period of time until like the very end, and I like really couldn't engage with it. And when this started, I was a bit like, oh, is this gonna be like a similar thing? And it kind of is, but there was something about it. I don't know if it was because I knew less about it going in. It's definitely not as iconic as Top Gun. Like, there's no soundtrack hitters. There's no take my breath away on the soundtrack, which is a
they went
damnation.
It didn't quite work. There's one called Show Me Heaven.
Yeah.
Just kind of sounds sort of similar to Take My Breath Away, but it didn't quite hit in the same way.
Yeah. But I found there was something kind of off kilter about this film that kind of I was more engaged with. And it was kind of what you mentioned where it kind of goes straight in. Like, it starts off and they go to Robert Duvall, who's on a tractor at the start of the film. And he's playing on, like, this southern accent through the entire film. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, can you get a race guy and do races for us? And he's kind of like, yeah, sure. And then the way Tom Cruise pulls up, he just pulls up out of nowhere. And I thought Robert Duvall, like, maybe knew him beforehand. It was going to be revealed, oh, I got you in because I know you're good. But then, as far as I understood, they didn't know each other. So, like, this random Tom Which Cruise random pops dude? Up. And this guy, and Robert Duvall's like, this is my son now, basically. And they just, and that was the thing I think on a sincere level kept me engaged, was that they had like quite a good combo. It is. I mean, the freeze frame at the end where they're just, that is the funniest thing ever.
So
they're like having Tom Cruise gets out his car, they're like having a, oh, we won. And then they're just like, race ya. The thing Robert Duvall's running, he's, I can't, obviously you're not going to see this if you're listening, but he's like, moving his arms and almost like a chicken as he's running, and then just freeze frame, boom, inspirational ending. That was weirdly off kilter for me. Mm. The way the racing was done, there was kind of no narrative to any of the action sequences except for like the ending one.
Mm. But, yeah, like, that's true. It's kind of difficult to follow the stakes of the races.
Yeah,
like, maybe because the NASCAR, I think, doesn't work in the same way as
and there's
F1.
A confusing. This could be how it would actually work. But the reason, you know, because like Tom Cruise becomes a good person and learns because he's helping his friend out. There's a weird legal loophole where his mate can't drive anymore through kind of an illness or a head injury. So he can't drive. And his team in NASCAR is like, well, the only way you can ever get paid is for someone else to drive your car.
Yeah.
Which feels a bit like loose, but anyway, that's where Tom Cruise steps in.
Yeah, I think the legality and the morals of NASCAR seem very questionable in this film. I don't know if that's changed much since the 90s.
Yeah.
Which I think plays into the odd nature of the film in terms of like the film kind of has that inspirational, like, yeah, we got to go going on. But then there is like the overtone of, If you crash in one of these cars, you are going to be messed up, like, yeah, literally, for the rest of your life. And talking about that, the crashes in this film, look insane.
Like that one where,
where the car hits Michael Rooker's and it just goes flying. Mm-hmm. It
flips and flips.
And usually when a film does that, and F1's a good example, when there is a crash, they'll like set it up, you know, they'll drown the music out. In this, it's just Tom Cruise is driving and then suddenly he's gone and he's in the hospital kick, wheeled into a CAT scan. You're like, okay, yeah, that's just
happening. And then he meets Nicole Kidman, who's the doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which
also could be a stripper, but you never
know. Yeah, that's too much.
I found that interesting because, it happens. And it's kind of like a mini Chekhov's gun because
it is actually
the fake cop thing happens where the lady's there and she's like, hello.
I love a weird moment anyway.
I was going to say, this film's like the perfect kind of... The reason it screams 80s is because it's corny, and then it's another word that rhymes with corny that I can't say on the podcast. Yeah. but that happens, and then he thinks Nicole Kidman is also in this part of like setup as well. And then I really like...
He believes that Nicole Kidman's a stripper because he's...
Yes.
Friends have tricked him into it. And then there's a very odd moment where he talks to her as if she's a stripper and she's actually a highly qualified medical professional. It hasn't really stood the test of time.
But no, certainly not.
You can see why they thought back in the day her like being like, you know, dismissed, like being like, oh, you're an idiot, and then like walking away was like, whoa, this girl doesn't, she's not like the other ones. But
and you know what I hate about that the most, like, like those goofy people around, like, oh, funny, the sideline.
And John C. Reilly's one of them, another.
And he's got a mad side story that goes nowhere. Well, I think his dad died doing NASCAR.
Yes, he's the racer that Rob Duvall sort of
that's
in. How do you see in at the start?
I think he just tells us.
Yeah, I think it might be flashback, just a brief flashback at the beginning when there's that race, but I'm not sure. Clarify.
Yeah, it was really funny that because at the end of towards the end, Tom Cruise is talking to Robert Duvall about like that his John C. Reilly's dad dying, and like they're kind of talking like it's just between them two, and it's like John C. Reilly is nowhere to be seen. It's like in the script writing sense, you probably want that character in there to like kind of have a bit of a say in that, but
yeah, also talking about name, Buddy Breverton. Well. Where are you from?
The name's really... I mean, even Nicole Kidman's character is Dr. Lewicki.
Lewicki.
Yeah, like quite confusing names to follow.
it's just this is a very, very odd duck of a film. But not to harp too much on that whole stripper subplot, but I did like how Robert Duvall's character comes up and is like, I'm really sorry about that. I don't know if you ever had an opinion. Because he's literally Tom Cruise's dad in this film, basically.
Yeah. I thought two interesting things I noticed about this film. One, I don't know if they would do this now, but maybe they would. It is so... The character of Cole Trickle is so similar to Maverick in Top Gun. Mm. Like, it's almost like if Maverick hadn't joined the Navy...
He'd be doing this.
You know, like they've obviously thought, well, that worked in Top Gun. We'll do it again. But I was sort of quite surprised that, like, they're almost exactly the same person.
It definitely seems like behind the scenes, there was just an incentive of, like, how can we replicate the success of Top Gun, use it, a similar thing.
Yeah.
And the producer, Jerry Bruckheimer, he did Top Gun, this film, Top Gun 2, and F1. So he's all over all of these films.
I can't
speak to the plot of F1, but I don't know how similar it bears to this.
Well, plot similarities, cars and Days of Thunder, reckless, cocky, amazing driver lands, gets a kind of father figure, Doc Hudson in cars, Robert Duvall in this.
Yeah.
Like, I would say 80% of the storyline is exactly the same.
Yeah, no, it's... It's like really interesting how like kind of there's just loops of feedback loops through this. I'll say this for F1. There's like some definite improvements on Days of Thunder in terms of the way the action scenes or the car scenes have a narrative.
Mm.
In F1 is way better. Like the kind of characterization of Brad Pitt as a driver is like much stronger than Tom Cruise, who's just kind of constantly shouting at Robert Duvall. Because the thing I kind of enamored me about this film was Tom Cruise's character like was just pretty terrible at his job.
Yeah, he's really bad. He doesn't know anything about cars. He's really erratic. He just screams at everyone.
Likely choice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, like, to be honest, what put me off in the beginning is that he comes in on a motorbike. And I'm like, dudes, you've been driving in a
Maverick.
Car.
He came straight from the Air Force. Straight, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Might as well be the same views.
Yeah.
Okay, so look, any more thoughts on Days Thunder before I'm going to ask you to give it a... And I'm so sorry about this. A checkered flash or a checkered flag or a car crash.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, thank you. Any final thoughts on Days Thunder? I would say I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think the racing scenes are good fun. And it's definitely, yeah, of its time in many respects. But yeah, it's a good fun time. Definitely a worthy companion piece to F1,
yeah.
I think, if you're going to come and see that.
I would say definitely I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I would. And you can't beat like the kind of product of it. Like the product is time nature of it is just so like, I don't want to say charming, but you're just a bit mystified by it. So one other scene I had to bring up, you know, when they get the rental cars out, have a race on the beach and the cutting of it was like weirdly modern in how
it was actually,
you could see a film of that time.
Dinner party.
Yeah.
That was very funny.
It was how little they showed the cars and how hard they were cutting out the music to like these people.
Oh,
in a,
so much.
It felt like almost surreal. And then the fact that Tom Cruise and Michael Rooker pull up, like, oh, that was all right.
Yeah. That's kind of how they get mates with, isn't it?
Yeah.
They hate each other and then they have this race and turn up smashed up to a dinner party. Yeah,
which I respect. You know, I would say the racing film genre kind of thrives on a bit of cheese, a bit of cornball energy, and that's in Days of Thunder. And I think F1... kind of definitely improves on aspects of this film in the ways in similar ways Top Gun Maverick improved on the original Top Gun. Kind of gives it a stronger emotional core, makes the action scenes have more of a narrative to it. So if you do enjoy Days of Thunder, definitely come and see F1. If you don't enjoy Days of Thunder, F1 is a massive improvement, I would say. So it's a win-win.
Nick, I shouldn't have ended with you actually. I hope, but
you're sorry to end on negativity. But if there's a rating in between that, which would be small engine fire, everyone's fine, but you can't finish a race.
That's your way for it. So checkered flag from you two.
I'd say so.
And technical faults.
Technical faults, but everyone walks out unharmed from you.
Exactly.
Okay, All right. But yeah, it was good. We'll do another watch along next month. But yeah, chaps, thank you for watching Days of Thunder.
I did like, by the way, yeah, without being all negative, I did enjoy this segment and I look forward to doing more.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've just got time to come back shortly and let you know a couple of things that are coming up at the Odyssey soon.
Coming soon.
Okay. Now we've just got time to talk a bit about what's coming up at the Odyssey in the next few weeks. Who wants to go first? Roberto, what are you looking forward to in the next couple of weeks?
So the first thing I want to mention that I'm really looking forward to, though the irony is I can't be here for it because I'm watching Face Off on 35mm in a cinema in Nottingham.
That is a mad film, by the way.
I've seen it before. I'm taking Jess to see it because she quite likes John Woo, so we're going to go do that because it's near my birthday as well. Though this got programmed at the Odyssey and I did kick myself a little because it's one of my favourite films of all time. So we're showing In the Mood for Love on Monday the 18th of August at 7:30. If you've never heard of this film, it's a Hong Kong film directed by Wong Kar-wai, who's generally considered, I think even nowadays, probably considered one of the best directors of all time. He was kind of, especially recently, Everything Everywhere All at Once kind of aped his style in one of the sequences. You can go look that up if you want.
Oh,
but
yeah.
In the Mood for Love is a film sort of in a similar vein to Brief Encounter, a couple who, but in this case, there's two couples, and the male and female, one of these couples, played by Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung, they realize their spouses are cheating on each other, and they kind of begin this friendship because of the kind of the shared pain of that, and then eventually kind of blossoms into a romance, but a very unrequited romance that is never spoken. And that's kind of the lasting impact of the film, I think, is this yearning and this longing that Wong Kar-wai is so magnificently able to achieve. And I remember watching him my first year in uni, and just like, it's one of those films you watch it. It's an hour and a half long, which is already fairly short, but it felt like 30 minutes to me. And I'm like, almost when it ends, you'll be hungry for more, but in like the most perfect way possible. So we got about 7:30 Monday, the 18th of June. And we've also got I think it's an extra short film afterwards as well. Mm-hmm. That's kind of come out recently from Wong Kar Wai. That's a similar, it's like a additional scene that you didn't add into the film for whatever reason. But highly, highly recommend that. An absolute classic and one of my favourite films of all time. So I'm sort of kicking myself that I can't go and watch it. But, you know, you guys can all go enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And then literally the day after that at 7:30, Tuesday the 19th of August, we've got Friendship, which is a film starring Paul Rudd and Tim Robinson, who... Paul Rudd, everyone knows of him. Tim Robinson is responsible for a Netflix show called I Think You Should Leave, a sketch show. And I highly recommend going to watch the first episode of this show because it's one of the most surreal, but
weird.
Oftentimes one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen. And just various sketches revolving around somebody just acting completely unacceptable in a social situation.
So like, and black comedy, isn't it?
It kind of dances between like really absurd, kind of dark at times, yeah. But mostly just built on this Tim Robinson's incredibly strange inflections and way of speaking. And some of the sketches you'll be like, what? And then the other sketches you'll be just belly laughing. And this film looks to kind of bring that into a sort of dark comedy sort of situation. I've heard it referred to as Banshees of Inisherin, but starring Paul Rudd and Tim Robinson.
Oh, cool.
So I'm very much looking forward to that as well. So I highly recommend come and see that if you want something different. And if you want something that at the moment seems to be giving everyone a bit of hope, giving everyone a bit of life, and is receiving rave reviews, come and see Superman, directed by James Gunn. Who gave us the Guardians of the Galaxy trilogy and seems to just be continuing his streak of amazing superhero movies. Mm-hmm. We've got that for a few dates, but our first showing is Friday the 15th at 12:30 of August, and we've got plenty of other showings there, so you can have a look at our program and see that. But I'm very excited for that as well. So yeah, good month coming up, I believe.
Good stuff coming up. Nick, what are you looking forward to?
Well, looking forward to, first off, our preview of a film called The Life of Chuck. This is 10 days, so we're getting this 10 days before general release as well, which is worth mentioning. But the film itself is quite an understated, like, journey of a man played Charles Krantz, played by Tom Edison. It's just like his life told backwards. What's more interesting to me is that this is based off a Stephen King novella. And I love Stephen King's books and writings. And also directed by Mike Flanagan. And Mike Flanagan's an acclaimed horror director. He's directed some of my favourite things recently, Midnight Mass, the TV show, and he also did Doctor Sleep, which is the sequel to The Shining.
Oh, the Ewan McGregor one.
Yes. Yeah. Very, like, understated, almost classic, like, horror origins. And I'm wondering how he's going to transpire that onto a film which is just about a man's life. But it's starring Tom Hiddleston, Chiwetel Ejiofor as well, Karen Gillan, I believe. So it's got a lot of, like, UK cast. Mm. And inspired cinematography from what I've seen, the trailer as well. So I'm very interested in that. And like I said, we got that 10 days before general release. So we'll have that on at the Odyssey, Tuesday the 12th of August at 7:30. And I'm also interested in Jurassic World Rebirth. So the first date for that is the 1st of August. I think it's Friday the 1st of August at 7:30. I have seen this one myself already, so that's why I am recommending it to everyone. It was a good watch. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I had many expectations, but I found myself enjoying it more than the last three Jurassic Worlds, like any one of those ones. Mm. For the first Jurassic World, second Forbidden Kingdom and Dominion, I thought it trumped those. Not by much, but it definitely was a better watch than those, in my opinion. It does go back to that sort of route of you've got your scientists and mercenaries, and then you've got your family that are stuck in the middle of it all, and those then cross over. But to an effective way where it feels similar to what has come before, but is introducing something a bit different. You know, it is a sequel to the Dominion movie that came out last.
Okay.
But there's a quick sub, like, clear up subtitle thing at the beginning.
But I found, yeah, Scarlett Johansson's great in it. The actors are great in it. I thought the overall story was quite compelling enough to take you to the end. Yeah, overall good fun for everyone, I think, actually.
I'm definitely going to see it. And also, I read a nice thing about Scarlett Johansson where she loved Jurassic Park as a kid, like the actual film.
Yeah.
And she's just beyond delighted to find herself now in one. You sort of think that these people get so famous and so rich that, you know, it's just another job. But yeah, she's a huge Jurassic Park fan and almost can't believe her luck that she's now in one of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Fans.
No, I mean, she plays well in it. She's a mercenary character in the movie. And then you've got Jonathan Bailey, who plays a doctor, and then Mahershala Ali, who's like ops, you know, he's a boat driver. He's all you can do sort of guy. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. We've got loads on in August as well that I will like to recommend, but I'm going to pass on to Sam now. If you want
ideas. Yeah, it's a pretty packed couple of weeks at the Odyssey. We've got loads of the new big blockbusters, lots of great cinema to see in the summer. So we've got plenty of screenings of F1. Of course, starting on the 25th of July and then throughout the rest of August. We've also got 28 Years Later coming up, as we mentioned earlier, from Friday the 18th of July, and Elio, the Pixar film that I talked about earlier, that's really lovely, definitely worth coming to see if you need to take the kids to see something. That's a really, really sweet film. And we've got that on the 28th and the 30th of July and in August at some point as well. I'm also showing, once again, Flow, the film that won Best Animated Film at the Oscars earlier this year. I know Roberto loves it, and so did I.
Favorite films of the year so far.
It's
absolutely
terrific. Yeah, it's a 5-star film, in my opinion. It's a really wonderful animated film that's all done by this one guy, really, on his own, on his computer, about a cat in a post-apocalyptic flooded world, just trying to survive and making friends with some animals along the way. Really, really lovely film. Definitely worth coming to see.
Good stuff. So there's a lot of big, exciting films like this. So we've got the kind of cool ones that you mentioned, the kind of quite niche film buff ones. We've got like Superman. There's a Jurassic Park.
Crazy.
There's an F1 going about. It's a lot going on. That's exciting.
Just want to mention quickly as well that August tickets, they'll go on sale this Friday, the 18th, yeah?
25th. Oh, no.
Yeah.
It is the 18th. Sorry,
this Friday.
So right, yeah.
August tickets go on sale this Friday, the 18th of July. That's for all of August. And, you can pick up tickets for anything from there.
Good stuff. Right, thank you, chaps. And because there are still a few more showings of the final ever Mission Impossible coming up, I mean, you can if you like timers ticking down and Tom Cruise running an awful lot, this is for you. So we're going to try and say goodbye in the style of Tom Cruise. Roberto,
I'm confident for this one. You know, those three guys in the Odyssey, I love them. I love those guys, Neil, Roberto, Sam, Nicholas, always just great guys. I love them. They love movies. I love movies, and I studied cinema. But listen to the Odyssey and come to the Odyssey Cinema. Just get your popcorn. Just relax. Thanks.
Very good. Sam, do you want to go next?
Oh, okay.
I just love cinema, okay? And you guys, you need to come to the Odyssey Cinema, okay? It's just the best cinema in the world. I love movies, and you're going to love movies. Come see it.
Why is Tom Cruise now suddenly like this?
He's an action star.
I did old Tom Cruise. You did young Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
so you got like hit. Oscar, yeah, Tom Cruise.
Can I do like a breathless Tom Cruise?
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
Okay. I know, I'm not going to bother. It's really hard, you know. Thank you for listening to The Odyssey. And come to the Odyssey Cinema, pick up a ticket, come watch Mission Impossible 7 and 5.
Very good. You guys were great. I loved it. You guys were great. Awesome. Chappers. Mission Impossible. Ethan Hunt.
That's couch for batteries.
Yeah, very true.
Right. Now let's get out of here so no one has to listen to any more of that. Thank you so much for listening. Say goodbye, chaps.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at The Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com. With your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at The Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.